Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Len Casper presided over a very strange baseball game last night, and he joins us now on the Bernstein and McKnight show. You follow him on Twitter, at Len Casper. Len, that was a thing. It started out weird. There was a bunch of plays we've never seen before, and then all of a sudden it turned into like a playoff game late.
It sure did. You know, I've never seen an inning quite like the one where the Braves ran out of the inning on two plays where it looked like the runner was safe. And because they didn't get the first replay reversed, the second one was not even allowed to be looked at. And the Cubs took advantage. I feel like that kind of decided the game. If Camargo is safe at the plate, I could see that being a 3 or 4 run inning, and it might have been the ball game. And then the ninth inning, as you said, Dan, it felt like an October game and just two great at-bats. Russell to tie it, and then Zobrist to give the Cubs the lead, and Brandon Morrow came in and was drama-free in the bottom of the ninth.
And we got you referencing Faulty Towers because you're talking about Fultonavich. And also, Fultonavich is just such a spaz. He's just so tightly wound that that's lending to it. Then Winkler comes in, and I think I was flipping with the basketball. So you're talking about Winkler, and I knew you had a Happy Days thing going on. So then I was trying to think of like the all-Cubs Happy Days actors name team, and I don't know. We'd have Thad Bosley, David Ross,
nice.
Billy Williams, and then I don't know if you could do Moose Morin for Aaron Moran if they would give you that. But there's probably more. But those were the only ones I had off the top of my head. I didn't know where that discussion was headed.
Yeah, my point was, I guess you could go Howard Johnson for Ron Howard since he finished his career as a Cub, right?
I'll get it to you.
Yeah, my point was that Winkler was born in 1990 and that he might not really know who the Fonz was. And JD's point was that the Fonz was so iconic that even younger TV viewers would know who he is. And I had to give him those points, so... Yeah, we veered off topic on occasion, but that's the fun of doing it. And as we said, it got really, really fun at the end of the game, and give the Cubs a lot of credit for not cracking after Edwards gave up the home run in the eighth.
Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, was all worked up during those plays, where it seemed like he had a pretty good argument for his guys being safe. I'm sure he was worked up in the postgame. I would imagine he'll be worked up in the pregame today. Are there... You know, as much as replay itself has moved forward in baseball, are there little tweaks that you'd like to see yet, or are we just dealing with a situation where we had a couple of bad calls and usually you don't see them back-to-back like that?
Look, I do think we are getting to a point, guys, where the inconclusive part of a replay decision has to be fixed a little bit. Home plate, to me, is kind of a perilous play because it's a little easier to tell when a guy touches a base because it's raised above the ground,
mm-hmm.
whereas home plate is not. And clearly, Camargo had kind of crossed the plane, to use a football phrase, but it was, I guess, not possible to tell if his fingers were actually touching home plate. So to me, we have to figure out a way probably to get a better look at home plate with, you know, the 4K resolution or whatever, maybe a ground level view to see if the hand or the foot actually touches the plate. Or we need to tweak the rule where if a player breaks the plane and if a body part is over home plate, that he is considered safe. Because I think everyone who saw the replay agreed that the hand was over the plate before the tag was applied, and I think that's why the Braves felt, and probably rightly so, that it should have been overturned. But the original call mattered. I think if Jim Wolf had called the runner safe, I think that call would have stood as well. And you just don't want a World Series game to be determined by a play like that.
Or you could actually use the basketball analogy of in the cylinder for offensive goaltending, which another rule I think they should get rid of completely anyway and just make it the international rule on that. But that's beside the point. Again, somebody running on the arm of Kyle Schwarber. Now, I get it that when going after a ball, there is a certain likelihood that Schwarber is going to fall down. I understand that. But if he doesn't fall down, and if he has the ball, he makes good throws. It reminds me a little bit of Alfonso Soriano that would do weird stuff and get misreads and take his little hop and take his eye off it. And he threw sidearm, but he threw accurately. And it wasn't the greatest arm, but it was effective. Maybe Kyle Schwarber is proving somewhat effective in that regard.
Well, I do think there's something that happens with outfielders and their arms. If you're considered a really good or above average outfielder, teams tend not to run on you a lot, and so your outfield assist totals won't necessarily reflect how good you are out there. Whereas I do think some teams look at Schwarber and they want to run on him. They think they can take advantage of it. And he's proven them wrong. And it was just a perfect throw. All three plays, you know, and I think that The two plays in the fifth inning, they probably got the calls wrong, but the throws were just spot on, both by Contreras. And then the first inning throw by Schwarber to give Freeman was just a seed exactly where he had to throw it. That's an inning's worth of outs the Braves gave up. I think in all three cases, you could say that they were the right decisions to do it. But the Cubs defensively were able to make those plays, and as I said, I think that ultimately determined the result of the game.
Have you ever seen a confluence like that of ball, catcher's mitt, and runner's foot?
No, I've never seen one quite like that. And Freeman, the only thing he probably could have done was try to jump over the catcher, but you know he can't see where the throw is. And as an on-deck hitter, Markakis was telling him to get down and slide. I don't know what the mechanic would be for the hand signal to jump over the catcher's hand. About the only thing we didn't see, we're kind of hoping that fifth inning would have ended on a steal attempt of second, runner called safe, and then the Cubs challenge, and they call him out. but I do have a feeling if that had happened, there would have been a lot of debris on the field.
Talking with the TV voice of the Cubs, Len Casper, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Your thoughts about Yu Darvish yesterday? Pretty good pitching, 61 in total, had the cramp and he had to leave, and that puts the Cubs bullpen in another spot with Tyler Chatwood going today where they may have to cover some innings. But overall, I was pretty impressed with what he's able to show.
Yeah, they have an extra arm in the bullpen. They sent Mark Zagunas back to AAA as opposed to a relief pitcher, and I think that ended up being the right call. A couple of short starts here the last 2 days with Quintana. And then Darvish, we didn't know until after the game that he had the leg cramping. But I agree with you, Connor. I thought it was one of his better outings. He did give up the game-tying homer to Inciarte, but then, you know, buckled down and threw three nasty sliders to get Jose Bautista to end that inning. The velocity was good. The stuff was good. I felt like he mixed in more of his repertoire early in the game and, you know, gave his team a chance. You would have liked to have seen him gone five or six. And hopefully, physically, you know, he's able to bounce back and make his next start, which would be probably Sunday. I think we were all curious to see how it would go after almost 2 weeks off. And I think in the end, you'd have to say it was a positive performance.
Yeah, it's always something, though. We're always left with something. You love the way the ball is coming out of his hand. You love some of the pitch selection. It looks like he's got command and hitting his spots. It's just we're still waiting for the Darvish experience to solidify in our minds as a lot of fans and critical fans just want clearer evidence that it was obviously worth it.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely legitimate. And I think anyone who's watched all of his starts, and he's made seven of them and doesn't have a win yet, I think on a couple of occasions has pitched well enough to win. There have been a lot of pretty bad ones, and I think – you know, from a physical standpoint, just kind of getting him through whatever's been bothering him here lately, whether the cramping was related to the fatigue that put him on the DL in the first place. We'll maybe find out some more about that later today. But, yeah, stuff-wise and just the way he handled a really good Atlanta lineup through those four innings, I was impressed.
Len, you're one of the guys who keeps an eye on the league, both the American and National League, as best you can while you're doing the play-by-play for the Cubs. So I know you knew to a certain degree what the Braves had coming through the pipeline, but now that you've seen a couple of games where the Cubs have faced and two more against them, are you as impressed or even more impressed by the Braves? I've just been taken aback by some of that young talent they have and more to come.
Yeah, it's gotten here quickly, and you know, right off the bat you can see – you know, Ozzie Albies, and he's been great against the Cubs, so I don't want to overreact, but he looks to me like he's a Jose Altuve-type player with pop, switch hitter, should hit for average, really athletic defensively, and is only 21 years old. Acuna just massacred that pitch in the eighth inning last night. We've only seen him a couple of days here, but he's only 20. And you know, they seem to have more in the pipeline, and we're going to get a look at Mike Soroka, a young pitcher that we haven't seen yet. He's going to pitch tomorrow against John Lester. And, you know, Fulton Nevich is 26, so he's, you know, he's not real young, but they've been kind of waiting for him to take that next step. And I think, as my partner said on our telecast last night, probably the next step for him is to maybe try to sink the ball a little bit and try to get some earlier outs, because as good as he is and as hard as he throws, he works a lot of deep counts and has not been a guy who can go six innings. Although we're in an era now where starting pitchers are not really required or asked to go six or more innings. I mean, he's been kind of a five and a third type guy and has given their team a chance to win. But, yeah, I'm really impressed with the Braves. They don't really have a closer you would put in the top five or six in the league. So that could be an acquisition they might make in the middle of the year, assuming they're still in a playoff position. But other than that, I think the future's bright, and I think the short term is very bright as well.
We were talking about the way the strike zone might be evolving a bit, pitchers and hitters evolving, and everything was on display last night, because in Albies and Acuna, here are two players who obviously have selected for this ability, this supernatural ability to hit high velocity low in the zone. And Albie just sweeps everything wherever he wants to. And the ball that Acuna hit with the confidence and ability that he did, he didn't just run into one there where he saw it, he hit it, and he hit it very, very far off a guy throwing 97 miles an hour. And then there was the pitch that Wilson Contreras struck out on, which was a four-seam fastball up. And I started to think, I don't want to allow these moments to sort of overrepresent. But that I'm looking, maybe I'm just seeing more of that now. I'm seeing some of these hitters have difficulty with high spin rate fastballs up and in, and concentrating on dropping the head of the bat on low velocity, and just where sort of in this continuum some of this might change.
Well, think about 10 or 15 years ago, and you go back to when the Cardinals had Chris Carpenter, and obviously Adam Wainwright was early in his career, and Dave Duncan was their pitching coach. What was the best pitch in baseball? It was a sinking fastball. Not a ton of guys really live with that pitch now. You know, Roy Halladay, that was his bread and butter pitch. Now, it really is that the high four-seam fastball, and elevation is something Joe Maddon talks about a lot. And I think with the swing path now, that a lot of sluggers have, where, you know, they've got a little loop in their swing and they try to elevate the ball, it just makes sense to try to make them pop the pitch up or miss it out of the zone. And, you know, not a lot of umpires are going to call the letter high fastball a strike, but some will. And I think vertically, if the strike zone is tweaked, I'm more of the mindset of not giving pitches off the horizontal corners, but maybe a little higher and even a little lower. As long as it's over the plate, I don't really have a problem with more strikes being called, and that's maybe the evolution of the game right now. But yeah, I think high fastballs and 12 to 6 curveballs are really in vogue at the moment, and guys who have those two pitches, you're seeing them have a lot of success.
And members of Invogue, let the record show.
Right.
Sorry.
Members of Invogue.
Well, you knew it was coming.
But no, of course I did. Well, you mentioned, Len, high-velocity fastball and 12-6 curve. All I could think of was that's Carl Edwards Jr. profile. I mean, that's what he throws. And yes, he got hit up a little bit by the White Sox the other day and gave up a homer to Ronald Acuna, who's going to hit, I think, a few more before the season is over. But by and large, Edwards has had a pretty decent start to the season. The strikeouts have been high. The walks have come, back down a little bit, with the exception of the blip against the White Sox. I don't imagine you feel like he's about to tilt or go one way or the other. He's been a pretty steady presence for Joe.
Yeah, and again, you know, he's like a field goal kicker, man. You miss one, and even from, you know, 50 yards, and everyone goes, what's wrong with him? And, you know, guys hit home runs these days, and, you know, I don't think the Cubs are concerned at all about it. Obviously, the closer, Brandon Morrow, had the one bad game, but has really bounced back and has been as good as we've seen him here over the last week or so. And Justin Wilson, he's kind of very quietly jumped back into a much more prominent role, and you know, I think he could be a real key guy in that bullpen for the Cubs down the road. And when they acquired him, there was thought that he might end up being a closer before they, you know, signed Morrow in the offseason. And the stuff is really crisp, and he's hitting, you know, 96, 97 on his fastball. So that's a nice development to see as well.
Do you figure the conversation around or the Cubs' attitude toward Jason Hayward on the DL now is on the concussion list, I should say, is just kind of a wait and see and very, very patient thing that will just have to be a day-by-day kind of situation?
Yeah, and you guys remember when Chris Bryant, who didn't go to the DL, missed four games after he got hit up in the head area. You know, I think what happens in those spots is basically players – you know, they don't want them talking to the media. I think there's a very specific list of things that they have to go through before they can even get them back into baseball activities. And, you know, I think it's taken very, very seriously now, and guys are missing a lot more time as a result of either a concussion or some sort of symptoms of that. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, and I know you guys aren't either, but I get really worried about those whiplash-type plays. Remember Corey Koski, the corner infielder? His career ended. He didn't even hit his head. He fell backwards in foul territory, and his head very violently whipped back toward the ground. You know, those are the ones that I really worry about. Albert Almora made a catch, one of his three or four amazing grabs in Colorado, and he had a very violent kind of neck whiplash movement, and fortunately he was okay. So whenever a guy, you know, suffers an injury banging up against the wall violently like Hayward did, I think you're always going to err on the side of caution as opposed to getting him back as quickly as possible.
It was going on with LeBron James last night.
I mean, you
saw the same thing, and then they of course say it's a sprained neck, and I'm like, well, wait a second. You may want to deal with that in the same way you deal with some of the other stuff, but again, he's an alien anyway, so I don't even know if modern medicine is even applies to him at this point. Anyway, Len, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you.
All right, guys. Talk to you next week. Have a good one.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.